I find stories fascinating, particularly for the way that they connect us, both to ourselves and to others and to the world around us. I mean, if you take one of my baby photos, or if you're someone that has baby photos or home movies, if you look at a photo of Joe Wilkinson, age 3, like, the thing that connects me here now standing before you to the boy in that picture is a story about all the things that led from that day to this one. And so stories connect me to my past, to who I have been. And likewise, stories will connect us to one another. Like if I say, the Packers are the best! Go Pack, go! Like there's a group of people that are like, yeah, I ascribe to that story as well. And then there's another group here like, no way, that's not true. But that's a story that connects a group of people. And there are stories that connect us to the world around us. Like if I drop my papers right now, there's a story about this thing called gravity that I believe in that leads me to believe that they won't just hang there. They'll fall to the ground. I'll have to fumble around for them and pick them up. You know, this is a story that shapes, as all these stories do, that shapes how I live, how I act in the world. And stories do that for each of us. And Jesus, in our gospel reading today, he's once again trying to fly under the radar of the community. He doesn't want the folks around him to know that he's present because he is focused on teaching his disciples. And he knows he has a hard teaching that they have to focus on and that they have to hear closely, where he tells them for the second time now that part of what is in store for him is that he will be handed over and will be killed, but that he'll raise again in 3 days. And now the disciples, part of what makes this so complicated for them is that we've heard earlier in Mark that they have made this connection in their minds. They've connected the dots and they have said, Jesus, you are the Messiah. And when they say that, Jesus says, don't tell anybody that yet. And part of the reason for this is that for them, for the culture that they have grown up in, for the identity of themselves as individuals and as a community, that idea of Messiah has a lot of very specific things attached to it. You know, they knew the stories about how God was going to send a Messiah who would be greater than David, who would free God's people from oppression and usher in a new kingdom that the Messiah would reign over. They knew this. They had built their lives around that story, and now they were following this man that they believed to be God's Messiah and had named him as such. And yet, that same man, the one that they believed was God's anointed, that had that key insight into who God was and what God was doing in the world, had just told them that part of what was in store for him was to be handed over to humankind and to be killed. And that did not, those two stories did not mesh well. They did not make sense for the disciples. And I can imagine what that must be like to have a story that is so foundational to your identity as a person, as a community, and have someone come along and flip it and overturn it. How that might leave you feeling afraid and vulnerable and uncertain about what the future holds. I mean, what if we're to believe that what Jesus says is true because we know him to be the Messiah, and if what is in store for him is to be handed over and killed, what kind of a world do we live in that God's anointed would be killed at the hands of humans? What does that mean for those who follow Jesus? What does that mean for us as God's people? What sort of promise is in store for us? And so in the midst of this uncertainty, in the midst of this confusion and unknowing and fear and vulnerability, the disciples choose to keep silent. They don't engage. They don't. Jesus is right there. He's teaching them. He wants them to know and to understand. But instead they punt. They shift from this fear-inducing and confusing teaching to an argument on their journey about which one of them is the greatest. And for me, that really resonates. You know, perhaps, like me, you know of points in your life where when you've started to feel vulnerable about your place in the world, when someone has presented you with something that is challenging or discomforting, that you, instead of engaging that directly, that you've sought to pivot away in order to regain control in some way, in order to reestablish your position. In my household growing up, we called those yeah buts. You'd hear something you didn't want to hear, and you'd say, yeah, but this. Yeah, but that. You know, that we would try and shift the focus in the conversation. And so that's what disciples do. Rather than engaging their vulnerability, engaging this hard teaching, they start talking about their pecking order. But Jesus is a savvy guy. He knows what's up. And so by the time they get to Capernaum, he says, hey, fellas, I noticed you arguing on the road. What were you talking about? And they fall silent because they recognize that, like, they're sheepishly like, oh, that's maybe not what we should have been talking about. And Jesus sees this for the teaching opportunity that it is, because he recognizes that if that's the argument that the disciples are having, that they're still not quite on the same page as Jesus. And he tells them, if you're concerned about how to be first in this new way of living that we're ushering in, humble yourself. Seek to be a servant of all. That's what we're doing here, fellas. That's what we're doing, friends. That's who I am in my ministry and what I'm about. And to further establish that point for them, Jesus looks about and he sees a little child in their midst. And so he brings the little child forward and he says, whoever welcomes one such as this welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not just me, but the one who sent me. Which I have to wonder is if this is Jesus' way of saying, look at this child who, you know, children are some of the most vulnerable persons within our community. Literally, completely dependent on the adults in their lives to care for them, to raise them up, to prepare them for whatever the future might have in store for them. Completely vulnerable and in need to rest on those around them who are caring for them. And Jesus says that in one such as this, the God of all creation identifies with. And when you welcome them, you are welcoming God. So that perhaps, I wonder if what the disciples are meant to understand, what we're meant to understand from this, is Jesus saying, look, I get it. If you're feeling vulnerable and anxious and concerned about what the future holds and upset because you no longer know exactly what your place in the world is, know that God is with you. Know that God is for you and is on your side, just as God is on the side of this little one. And perhaps when we can get hold of that story, when we can believe that fully, that that's what helps us to let go of envy and self-ambition. That maybe when we can trust that even in the midst of all of our vulnerability or uncertainty, that God has still loved us, still claims us, still has a place for us in the story of what God is doing, that then we can let go of trying to fight for position and recognition in our own communities, in our lives. And we get it, right? To some extent, like we understand that. I mean, that's why we're here this morning, right? Because at some point in our lives, someone shared with us this story about the love that God has for us, about the way that God has claimed us with that love and has welcomed us to be a part of God's family and a part of what God is doing in the world. And we get this opportunity to live out our belief in this story, our belief and our faith in who God is and in what God is doing. Whenever we give of ourselves and our time and our possessions to care for those who are vulnerable in our midst. You know, and we each have opportunities wherever we go, at whatever point in our walk of life we're at, to be able to love those around us, to be able to show in our words and our actions that they too are worthy of love, are worthy of care and compassion. And perhaps there's a name or names that are bubbling up for you right now of either a person in your life or a community that you can be God's hands and feet for, that you can be Jesus with skin on. And in the midst of this conversation, if there's not things bubbling up, that's part of what we do as well as a community of faith, is to rally around one another and to invite others to join in bringing love to the needs that we have seen, so that when we are serving the folks in the community who are relying upon the ministries of Serenity Inn or Sussex Outreach Services, or who are relying on the folks over at Hepatha, when we support those different ministries, when we are in those places, we're providing folks an opportunity to see that the words that folks profess about the love that God has for them are not just empty words, but that they come with a tangible experience of that love, of that compassion, of that care and concern for what their needs are. Because this is the story that is revealed in the person of Jesus Christ, that God so loves each of us, that God came to dwell among humankind, and that in the cross and in the empty tomb that we hear and have revealed for us by God, that not even the powers of sin and death are great enough to separate us from the love that God has for us. And that so called and claimed by this love, that we now are invited to be stewards of that love, to share that story through our words and through our actions, through the stories of our lives with the people that we come in contact with. And like the disciples, there may be times where as we strive to follow Jesus more faithfully, that we recognize that there are stories that we have picked up, that we have been holding on to, that are in conflict with the story of God's love for us and for the world. Stories that tell us that someone is only deserving of compassion if they've earned it. Or stories that tell us that only certain kinds of people are welcome. Or maybe stories that tell us that really we're not that worthy of God's love, that we know what we've done, that we don't deserve it, that there are these stories that needle at us right where we are most vulnerable, most susceptible to doubt and insecurity and fear. And yet, Jesus came so that in those moments we can say, yeah, but God is greater. Yeah, but no matter what we do, no matter where we go, no matter what the world throws at us, God still loves us. That God's promise of new life rings true for us this day and every day. And so we have this responsibility in our own lives and the lives of people around us to confront those stories and to flip them like tables in a temple marketplace so that they might hear, if for the first time, if for the 100th time, again, with new, fresh ears, the story of God's love for them. The story that God is crazy about them, is wildly, madly, deeply in love for them, just as God is so madly, deeply in love with us. That God was willing to come and to live and die so we might experience new life. And that is the story that we steward, that we shepherd, that we share with all the world. Amen.